Welcome to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson. I'm Amanda Scharger, joined in the studio today with archivist and project director of the Arizona Queer Archives, Jamie Lee. And she's in the studio today to talk about an immediately upcoming event taking place at 4 today from 4 to 6. It's the pop-up archives of the Arizona Queer Archives featuring the Southwest Feminists Reunite Group in collaboration with FARR, F-A-R-R. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi, thanks, Amanda. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, you bet. Right under the wire. I really wanted to fit this project in because it's so interesting, and I would love for 30 Minutes listeners to know more about it. What is a pop-up archive?
Well, in this particular case, this is an event where we are taking stories and oral histories that we've collected over the last, 3 years, and we're bringing them out into the community. And we'll have performers read from the oral history transcripts at the sites where these big events happened. And these events are related to the Southwest Feminist Group from the 70s and 80s. And we'll be gathering at 4 o'clock at Antigone. And we have the oral history of Patricia Kelly, who was one of the founders of Antigone in 1973. And so she told that story of how they came to develop this particular feminist bookstore. And so I thought that would be a great space then to kick off the event. And then we'll do the welcome and we'll head off into three other locations. And that one is the historic Y, one is the Artemis Child Care Center, which no longer exists, so we'll be standing on a curb up on University and 2nd. And then the third is on 5th Avenue, one block north of University, near that park, where we'll be talking about this 5th Avenue Women's Collective that came together, I think it was 1972. And so what we won't see on Sunday are all of the locations that made up Tucson's first rape crisis center, the first LGBT, well, actually, I think it was just lesbian and gay call center, and the Women and Children's Center Against Domestic Violence. There were many other places, and so we'll have that on a map that then people can take away and just, you know, drive around the city on their own and check out all of these spaces that don't hold markings for us, you know, today that says, wow, Lavina Tomer was here, Leslie Carlson was here, Ann Yella was here. Like, these are women that, you know, made quite a difference. And we see a legacy of it in the organizations that we, you know, donate to and participate in today, but we don't know the tracings. And so we're going to be reanimating these histories in the community, in the spaces where it took place, and we're pretty excited.
Talk about the Arizona Queer Archives and how that got started, and then how it led to this aspect of the pop-up.
Well, the Arizona Queer Archives started in fall of 2011, but before that, when my family and I had moved here in 2007, I was like, hey, where's the queer community? I didn't know anybody, and I heard Wingspan had their annual dinner, and they needed volunteers, so I went through the training, and I volunteered. And MJ Talbot and I, we opened doors for people and greeted them at the Tucson Convention Center. And all of the moments that we had, he and I just talked and talked. And he said, there are so many elders in the community who are starting to pass away. We need to collect these stories. And I was like, well, it's a good thing he talked to me because I'll do it. Let's do it. And so I went home. I did research. I found the Alliance Fund had an opening for a grant call. So I applied for a grant. Thanks to Pan Left, they were my fiscal agent. And then the Arizona LGBTQ Storytelling Project began in January 2008. And so I'd collected many hours of oral histories. And when Susan Stryker arrived and started directing the Institute for LGBT Studies on campus, she said, I heard you made an archive, and how about you make a big archive here at the Institute? And so I rolled in these oral history projects into that as a cornerstone storytelling collection and put together the Arizona Queer Archives, which was really my test kitchen for my dissertation project as I created a queered archival methodology for archives and archivists to dive into to figure out how is it that we don't just do things, but we think about what we're doing in the archives, because often we're given a list of practices, but we don't always know where those practices came from since we just started working at a place. But how do we think about them considering they're changing social contours and cultural and economic, like what's happening? It always affects then how we name our, you know, artifacts and records, how we place them, how we understand them, and how we make them accessible. And I think having that methodology then that kind of tells us how to think about it or suggests ways that, you know, here are some questions to think about, I think it could do some good for us to reimagine what archives can do. And so this project as a pop-up then like takes those records off the shelves and out into the community, and we see new ways that we're making history today with these stories.
Are all of the archives that you collected available on the website?
Not at this time. What's streaming right now are the oral histories, and we still have probably about 30 hours still needing to be compressed and transcribed. And with archives, we have to do Dublin Core, like metadata standards. And so we've been working on that as a community. And so one of the things with Arizona Queer Archives and using queer theory as a way to kind of unhinge these standards that we've been set up to create archives through, how do we understand how the community produces knowledge is different than what the structures are that we expect to receive materials. And so with doing this, it takes some time, more time than just the usual archive, I think. But it's been great fun working with community. And that's how we came upon the Southwest Feminists as a group to really focus on, is because Lavina Tomer, she said, I want to collect oral histories. And so once a month, she would come to my house, and I would train her on how to set up the camera, how to do the wireless mic, and she would go and collect oral histories. And so, you know, just like Pan Left's mission of not being the experts, but sharing the knowledge of doing film and video production, that's how the archive, I think, is generating new, you know, legs out into the community. And it's not just me as a storyteller or a story collector, but it's many people now learning how to do it.
And you've also been working with the Feminist Action Research in Rhetoric. They're working and co-sponsoring this project. And how did that work come about?
Well, it was really interesting because this group, FAR, they met in December. And I said, have I got a project idea for you? And it's something Adela and I had been talking about, like, how do we do a pop-up archive or a pop-up film festival or something that seems a little like off the cuff and not always overly planned. And so I met with this group and they're like, yes. And they're like artivists and they want to do cool, like creative stuff in the community. And we've been working on it and meeting once a week since December to put this together. And so we'll have musicians and puppet gurus at different sites, and we'll do a social media thing at the Historic Y and just seeing how do we understand that what we touch today becomes records for the future archives. So it'll be interesting.
You're listening to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson. My guest today is archivist and project director of the Arizona Queer Archives, Jamie Lee. And just in a few minutes from now, at 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, the pop-up archives of the Arizona Queer Archives featuring the Southwest Feminist Reunite Group in collaboration with the Feminist Action Research and Rhetoric Group are all coming together. It's kicking off at Antigone's at 4 o'clock, and it's going to three other locations. How can people learn more about this project, the pop-up archives taking place today, and be involved, learn more in the future?
Well, right now, if they dive onto their Facebook and look up Arizona Queer Archives, we have the event listed at the front page there. And for future reference, if people are interested in donating their materials or telling their story to be part of the Arizona Queer Archives collections, they can visit the website azqueerarchives.org and contact us through that site. And, you know, we can go out and collect oral histories, or we can train them on how to collect oral histories, and they can collect it in their own communities. And we're also offering workshops to teach people how to put their own archival boxes together for the archive and prepare them so it's not an archivist, the all-knowing person, accepting it and, you know, getting rid of the stuff they feel doesn't belong, but really letting it be up to the person to say, this is what I want in my box. Here you go. And maybe they could even narrate it and tell the story about why these things are important. So I think it's kind of a fun project of participatory, you know, action with creating archives.
Yeah, I think so many of us are just natural archivists with boxes of stuff, scraps that we've saved, and maybe without a particular form or a form that's known only to us. So to have that help in making it be accessible and meaningful to people in the future is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's been fun, you know, as people, even who had done research here on Wingspan or Derechos Humanos for dissertations, and these are people who had attended Temple University and they work in Calgary, they're like, hey, we still have our research. We're going to put it up on your site. So it becomes a hub where we can see what others have looked at based on our community or what are we creating right in the community. And I'm hoping to get the oral history of your own Bob Diaz. I've been bugging him every week.
We're just going to camp out here until he comes on Wednesday.
All right.
Well, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Amanda. I better get down to Antigone and kick off this thing. Woo!
And that's Jamie Lee, archivist and project director of the Arizona Queer Archives. Again, today at Antigone's at 4 o'clock, kicking off the pop-up archives of the Arizona Queer Archives featuring the Southwest Feminist Reunite Group. And more information is available at the AZ Queer Archives Facebook page or azqueerarchives.org. Up next on 30 Minutes, Luis Alberto Urrea with a keynote address at the 2012 Tucson Festival of Books. Luis Urrea is an award-winning best-selling author who was born in Tijuana to a Mexican father and American mother. He uses his dual cultural experiences to explore greater themes of love, loss, and triumph. Here is Luis Urrea on 30 Minutes, 91.3 KXCI. Tucson.
Buenas tardes, Tucson, Arizona. Tijuana in the house. Before I speak, I just want to thank this incredible book festival and the Viners and Tucson. I do this a lot, and I've got to tell you, this may be the fourth largest, but it's the number one best in the country. It's true. So I thought before I got into this, I would try to answer the question that's probably burning in all your minds right now. Like your number one literary question, which is why do I look Irish? So let's begin there. This is why I look Irish. My family's from Sinaloa, south of Mazatlan. You spring breakers probably been down there, and cruise passengers. They're from a little town called Rosario, Sinaloa. And my grandma from Rosario, Sinaloa, my father's mother, was named Guadalupe Murray. So, red-headed, blue-eyed Irish lass. My uncle, by the way, is named Carlos Hubbard, so it's a little tradition. I just wanted to tell you a couple of things. I want to watch the clock because I get preaching and the spirit comes on me and I'll go too long. So I have 20 minutes and people were giving shout-outs. I want to say hi to Nuestras Raíces in the back. Okay? So I have this relationship with Arizona I wanted to tell you about. I was, of course, born in Tijuana, raised in San Diego. And we weren't people with much money, so I didn't ever go anywhere. Though I went to the Grand Canyon when I was a little boy. And I've got to tell you, if you're from San Diego, going to the Grand Canyon is going back east. And my parents took me in a 49 Ford and we drove to the Grand Canyon, and it blew my mind. And that kind of got me interested in Arizona. But since this is a book festival, you need to know what made me Arizona crazy was good old Ed Abbey. I read Desert Solitaire and went completely out of my mind. And from then on, I knew that I was in service to Arizona. I've tried to come here as much as possible. And somewhere along the line in my writing career, it was time to work on Hummingbird's Daughter and Queen of America. They ended up taking me 26 years to write. And about 1995, I realized I've been working on this book all this time about the Yaqui people and about happenings south of Arizona and happenings in Baja, Arizona. So I thought, well, I better go down there, right? I better go to Tucson and try to learn about the tribe and learn about the area. So I moved down here. And I have to tell you, those of you who are from here will recognize a story like this right away. I wasn't quite ready for this. I got here and I did a little reading at a lamented bookstore, The Coyote's Voice. Anybody remember Coyote's Voice? I'm driving around missing the bookstores, don't you? Let's get some money together and bring back a haunted bookshop, for crying out loud. Coolest bookshop in America. Anyway, so I did this little appearance at the Coyote's Voice, and it got in the paper, you know, and I was in my little spot that I was renting down by the El Minuto Cafe, and the phone rang. I didn't know anybody, but the phone rang, and I answered the phone. I said, you know, hello, and this voice, a woman's voice said, Luis Alberto Urrea. And I said, yeah, that's me. And she said, you don't know me, but I'm your cousin. I said, really? And she said, yes, I'm your cousin, Esperanza Urrea. So I thought, wow, you know, I didn't know I had cousins in Tucson. And she said, I want you to know that I am Mayo, tribe related to the Yaqui people, and I'm married to a Yaqui man, and my grandmother was named Maclovia Borbón Morojoki, and she was the medicine woman of the Mayo village of El Jupa de Sonora. Right? And I'm thinking, what the? So I said, well, that's great. And she said, you have another group of cousins across town who are Apache. I said, wait a minute, I've got Yaqui, Mayo, and Apache cousins? And I'm thinking, but I look Irish. She said, yes. And she said, I have a message for you. Here to me is the quintessential Tucson moment. She says, in heaven, before you and I were born, we were identical twins. And God chose, as a test, to separate us and send us to the different parts of the world. I, of course, am like, what? And she says, so I have searched for you for 43 years. And now I have found you. Okay? Now here it comes. You'll know this part. The next sentence is, want to come to a party? Wow! So, of course, I went to the party. And you know, I did not understand that if you're going to write a book about a medicine woman, you should be around medicine women. And it was a completely transformative experience for me to enter into that world and be taken in by her and taught. And Hummingbird's Daughter definitely came from being here. And I thank Tucson forever because that changed my life. But I want to say that, you know, since my beloved got a shout out, you know, some of you may not remember this, but she was a reporter at the Tucson Citizen, and we did an interview, and look what happened. It's the longest interview in history, so we were our own Tucson journalism scandal, which was nice. But you know, one of the sponsors here, Bookmans, I just want to say, you know, you guys can't know this, but when I was here, my fortunes were a lot different than they are now, and I didn't have anything. But I would go to Bookmans and buy haiku books. And when I was courting, I know, right? Haiku! Somebody applauded haiku, and now I feel good. I feel like God is in the room now. But I took Cindy to Bookmans, and I pulled out Mary Oliver's collected poems and sat her on the floor and read her poems. Again, look what happened. So thank you, Bookmans, for being there. You guys. Now, Teresita, the saint of Cabora, my aunt, is famously a resident of Clifton, Arizona. But she lived here, and Queen of America begins in her life here. She lived right in the middle of I-19. Her house was torn down in 1966, right past Tubac. If you're going toward Arivaca, it's right there. So if you like her, say a little prayer for her as you go by, because she lived there with her father, and they would come into Tucson. They would go to the Elysian Grove Market, the original Elysian Grove Market, to do their shopping, and I got to rent part of it to live in for a little while. So I got to sleep in the place where she bought her victuals. Unbelievable. And I traced her life. You know, you may not know this because you haven't read the book yet, probably, but she lived her life across the United States and ended up on East 28th Street in Manhattan. Yeah, it's a Kinko's now. But it's there. And we followed that. Now, all that work was astonishing. My experience here was astonishing. But I was called back by another piece of magic and medicine, and that was to try to find my way into the U.S. Border Patrol to write The Devil's Highway. And I just want to say to you, if you watch my signings, you will see this phenomenon, and I really love it. The Border Patrol and I, unlikely as it may be, ended up being great friends. I think they feel like I'm their slightly brain-damaged liberal pal, that they forgive me, you know? And they taught me so much new stuff about writing. I'm very thankful to them. They've taught Devil's Highway at the Academy for a while. But what happens at the signings is that people who are undocumented often come find me. And so at the front of the line, you'll see these guys dressed in cowboy clothes, and they're sort of furtive, looking around, and then they lean over and say, Michoacan, right? And I sign their books, they walk away. But at the back of the line, there's Border Patrol guys, and they'll be in cowboy suits, and they're a little furtive too, and they'll, use Border Patrol. And I always tell them, dude, you missed the wrong end of the line. But they gave me a lot of insight into writing, and I'm really thankful to them for it. So I feel like I've been shown things that I didn't expect to learn in life, and a lot of them thanks to Arizona. You know, I get the opportunity to talk all over the country now to people, and I just want to tell you, you know, I talk to every kind of political group, every belief system, every stance, every persuasion, and I found something out that I didn't know. I found out that we're still a family. I found out America still is a family. We've just forgotten how to talk to each other. We actually love each other. We actually want to love each other. So, you know, I hear all this worry about Arizona and upset, you know. Personally, I had 5 books taken in what Fitz was talking about, which was kind of interesting because I had the most books taken, so it made me kind of badass all of a sudden. I was the champion of the band all of a sudden. And I just want to say, since it's always about the silver lining, I will thank the Tucson School District for upping my book sales insanely and for upping my Facebook friends and Twitter followers by 100. Really interesting. But this is what I just want to throw out there to you. I think, you know, I worry about the kids not having an opportunity to learn. That's all I worry about. Keep my books. I don't care. I'm doing all right. But I just want the kids to get their chance to learn. And, you know, I think people are doing things. And, you know, this thing we've been given, these words, it's sacred. And it transcends all of these barriers. It transcends all of these things that separate us. And I promise you, people want to talk. They want to be together again. And for me, the whole point, what I think this place is really about, is right here tonight with us. TFOB is what it's about. All of us together, celebrating art, celebrating words, looking out for each other, and remembering we're a family. So my only message out there when I talk to people is a very simple one that I learned here, not only from the medicine people, but oddly enough, from my Border Patrol friends. Yeah, you wouldn't think a Border Patrol guy is a shaman. But one of my agents, my senior supervisory agent, started telling me about his life and his belief, and the first thing he said was, we were out on the Devil's Highway. Nobody around for 100 miles. He was the only guy with a gun, by the way. I was thinking, hope I don't make this guy mad. And he said, I know what you think of me. And I said, really? What do I think of you? He said, you think I'm a jackbooted thug. I thought, perhaps I can penetrate Mexico illegally right now. Take it away. He said, I'll tell you what I am. I'm your jackbooted thug in shining armor. And I looked at him and he said, you know, my daddy was a rancher. I'm a rancher. You know what I do all day? I chase ranchers around the desert. He said, in some weird way, I feel like I'm chasing my own people. I was looking at him. He said, you know, if my wife was hungry, I'd have to cross any border to feed her. I would do it. I was looking at him thinking, he's crazy because I can destroy his career. I'm writing a book, and he knows it. I call it grace. Somebody gives you their life and says, here, I'm going to trust you with this. And he did. And he went on. The thing that moved me the most, he said, was, people think we don't have any feelings. I'm a father. I've got a daughter. He said, you carry a dead 19-year-old woman through the desert for 6 miles in your arms and tell me I don't have feelings. I am starting to crack. Every alarm, born in Tijuana alarm, Chicano rider alarm, you know, liberal alarm is saying, may not love Border Patrol, may not love Border Patrol, danger, danger, don't love. And I couldn't help it, and I turned to him and I said, Kenny, I love you, man. And the agent said, I kind of like you too, buddy. And Kenny taught me something that I've never forgotten, and I try to keep in mind, you know, and that is, there really is no them. There's only us. And we're trying to figure out how to deal with us. We're a family. I thank you so much for being here. This festival, if you haven't been here yet, is awesome, and you're going to see something really special tomorrow. And just remember, whenever you feel bad, or you're worried, or you're angry, or people criticize us here, this is what it was all about. Thank you.
That was Luis Alberto Urrea with a keynote address from the 2012 Tucson Festival of Books. Thank you for listening to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson.